Whittier, let's see, sewer done Whittier. We'll be lucky to get done by six.
The two most beautiful ports in the state? Harbors in the state? Ports and harbors. And mountains.
There you go.
Hey, Larry. So if it's not reconsidered in 4 days, it just goes through without.
So if they didn't have a vote on.
So that's a good sign so far.
Yeah, anyway, I just pulled the calendar to see if they don't.
The biggest part of that strategy is that you can't go ahead and do whatever you want charged and all that kind of thing.
Anyway, but I just pulled it.
Cup of coffee, Gary?
I guess I better. I guess I better. Oh, okay, I'll let you serve today. You must have a bill here, Richard, huh?
For sure. Mr. Foster?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
5:10, the House Transportation Committee is now convening. And we've got Mr. Pruitt here, the operator of sewer chips. I first of all want to apologize to you, Mr. Pruitt. This is the first meeting we've had in about a month here. The floor session and then Majority Caucus takes precedence over these meetings here. And we've been having one hell of a time trying to hold a meeting. I know you've come down here twice. And I want to apologize on behalf of this committee that we haven't been able to hear you yet. But today we've got you. So if you want to go ahead, I thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I thank you for the opportunity to make the presentation. Sewer Chips Dry Dock Incorporated is, as the members may know or may not know, is in Seward, Alaska on Resurrection Bay across at the industrial, what we call SMIC or Seward Marine Industrial Park. It is a ship lift full service shipyard, and we employ about 53 people at present. Our year-round employment is in about 48 to 50 average employees. We feel that probably the employment will peak out. Our goal is to reach a stable year-round workforce of 80 to 90 employees as a repair facility, with peaks in the summer months to 100 to 120. The sink or lift or the ship lifting mechanism, as we'll see in the video, and there's I believe there's a album there with some pictures of the operation that the committee members can take a look at and sort of gives you an idea of what we have been doing, the class of vessel that we can work on.
Oh, it's driving. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the album right now. I wanted to thank Commissioner Campbell for taking time out, also for sitting in. I didn't realize you had such an operation there, Mr. Pruitt.
Yes, how are you doing, Commissioner?
Very fine, Jim.
The facility is a 5,700-ton dry dock, and it's got the capability of lifting vessels up to ground level on a prearranged boat carriage and transferred up to the uplands. On the video I prepared, there's not any sound to it. I was going to be the sound for it, so I really don't know if it's on or not. But
it's not on, Jim.
Oh, really?
I don't know why. They're having trouble with it. Okay.
That's amazing.
But the vessels are lifted up on the platform. They're put on a carriage, lifted up to ground level, put on a rail system, and they're transferred to the uplands. It's the new age ship lift facility being environmentally more pleasing. That there's no work done over the water, and it's all done on the uplands. We have a machine shop facility, and we are the only yard in the state of Alaska that is approved by the American Bureau of Ships to do shaft cladding and repair.
Wow, look at that.
This was the last hurdle that our facility had in actually becoming a full service facility. And in fact, any inspected vessel that we haul, such as the Alaska Marine Highways Fleet, need to have American Bureau of Shipping approval and inspection of their propulsion system. And if you do have something wrong or the shaft surface needs to be replatted without the certification in state or in house, you would either have to forego the repair, ship the shaft outside of the state.
Would have something like that.
What would you do with something like that? Did you get the video running?
Yeah, it's running, Jim. It's gone through the credits, and they're showing the bay in the mountains now.
Okay. They're doing it as a panorama of Resurrection Bay and a Seward. We're on the east side of Resurrection Bay. There's approximately 7 miles of paved highway coming around the bay into the Marine Industrial Center. The Chugach mill facility, which is called Seward Forest Products now, past the new state penitentiary, and to Seward Marine Industrial Park, which has a boat basin with a 400-foot dock, and it sort of panoramas around. You can see the bay area. You'll see a shot there of inlet salmon's facility. We have a 250-ton travel lift also that brings vessels into the yard for repair. And of course, the sinker lift. And I think that first shot you're looking is the Bartlett Lane dockside. And we're in the process of dry docking a catcher processor, and I believe it's Alaska One.
Right on target, right where we are.
You can see that the vessel is brought in, positioned in between the when the platform's down position, and the pre-arranged cradle and the blocking by the dockmaster is established, and then we lower the platform down, float the vessel in, center it between the over the cradle, and bring the platform up to ground level. The facility is a classed dry dock, meaning that it is classed by the Lloyd's of London, and we do an annual inspection, and it's built to their specifications and managed and repaired and maintained to Lloyd's of London specifications. Our welders are all certified welders, certified with the Coast Guard. We are both a ABS and Coast Guard inspected facility. The transfer is done Alaska One. We're transferring it with a 966 front loader. Is that about where we are now, Ray?
Right on target.
Okay. It's pulled up to the workstation, and the 300-foot workstation that you'll see on up later on, there's some footage of dry docking the Testamina, which is going to sea trials tomorrow, matter of fact, and be back in service on the 1st. But we pull it up to the facility where we can hook it into sewer, water, electricity, and energize it. We also have steam if there's an onboard boiler to generate heat for the vessel. We're in the process, and we'll start construction as soon as the frost gets out of the ground, of a 300-foot high, long by 132 feet wide, 10-story high boat building to go over the 300-foot rail. I think Commissioner Campbell, when he was here, knows the area that I'm talking about, and it's represented with where the right across from the transfer pit. There's a transfer system there that has rails, a pit that runs rails running north and south, and there's two side rails, so we have the capacity of dry docking a 300-foot plus vessel and bringing it across the transfer pit carriage as a bridge, and we can also put a vessel on that carriage and slide it over and put it in two 150-foot queue length berths. That gives us a capacity of dry docking two 200-foot vessels to the north and then straight back to the east a 300-foot vessel. The facility is designed and built where it can be expanded. The transfer system can be expanded in size, the berths can be added onto and expanded in the number. Also, the lifting platform itself can be, the capacity of it can be expanded by adding more winches to this facility and extending the platform itself. Somebody would give me a hint where we are now.
Showing the lift with the boat beside it, not on top of it, but beside it. Looks like a ferry.
The Bart lives in the back.
Okay, I think we're some more pictures of the platform without a vessel on it, and giving there should be some shots in there of the cell construction of the platform. Theoretically, we're using one lifting apparatus to lift vessels and transfer them up to the upland. So you're limited by how many upland berths you have and how much carriage components you have. Carriage components can be pinned and pulled apart and put into any configuration to haul barges or V-bottom vessels. The keel gloss can be stretched out in length depending on the weight capacity that you're dry docking.
He's telling me we're looking at the Testamina right now.
Mm. Yeah, we're on the Testamina now, Jim.
That's probably one of those rare days that we have snow and rain. It's again, the Testamina was positioned in between the two rails and was brought up to dock or ground height, and we used two vehicles to transfer it. I think there's a 966 and a Grove crane hooked up in tandem that pull that vessel to the uplands. There's enough capacity at the facility right now to put it in perspective to haul the Testamina and transfer it up to the other rail, have the Bartlett over on one of the side rails, and possibly another ferry to Contier or on the approach rail. Leaving the platform open for emergency repairs if something happens that you need to bring a vessel up, and you can always dry dock on the platform itself.
It's quite a deal, huh? Yeah.
I'd like to put my boat up there.
Give you a little background of what has been happening with Seward ships. In 89, our gross payroll was $864,432. locally into the community vendors was $409,000. In 91, that went up to $1,133,454 was payroll, $519,545 going to local vendors. In 93, 94, we're going to be over 2 million in gross payroll to the economy, and the vendors is going to be close to $730,000.
Looks like the Testamina is just high and dry now, Jim.
Well, you see, probably, we'll probably be transferring the Testamina, which is a kind of an impressive sight to see a ship that large being rolled down a rail system. I know when Senator Little was at our facility here a month or so ago, she asked if we were standing alongside the Testamina, and she felt a little uneasy talking there. She said she'd like to top it if we could move over a little bit. It kind of looks like she's balanced on the Testamina on her vessel when we haul it up on a golf tee, that they're quite stable. The trade that Seward Ships Dry Dock looks at in our market research can be broken down into several categories. The Alaska Marine Highway System is one. Total available vessels being 8. What is available to Seward Ship Dry Dock right now is 2. Forest product industry vessels available to, in our market survey in the state, is 50. We feel there's available to Seward Dry Dock is 6. Fishing vessels in the state is approximately 400. We feel about 190 of those are vessels that are available to our dry dock. Passenger vessels, 28. I think this figure is probably outdated, 11, and that's increasing. Has increased since this information was put together. Miscellaneous government vessels, 17. 7 of those are available to Seward Dry Dock. Military, there's 20. and 8 are available to us. These statistics or these numbers will have changed and over the last 4 years. Our market share has increased considerably. Also, we're looking for a larger increase with the building being constructed. We haven't competitively bid on the Coast Guard fleet and buoy tender fleet, although we have dry docked them in emergency situations. But because of the specs that are required in sandblasting and painting, we felt that we needed to be undercover in December, January, February, when that type of work is being done. Also, the big benefit of having this dry dock under a roof is that deck side work can be accomplished. There's several of the organizations and businesses that keep it complement of man aboard, such as the Coast Guard keeps his readiness 24 hours a day. The Alaska Marine Highway System does a lot of the work themselves on deck from water line up, and so this makes it much easier to accomplish their painting and maintenance work.
Well, Mr. Pruitt, that's really impressive. Now, for the record, before we go any further, we've got Representatives Menard, Veazey, Foster, Mulder, Hudson, and Davis here, pretty much the entire committee. We also have staff here, I see, from Representative Sanders' office. We've got pretty much a full committee here. You know, I've been on this committee, Mr. Pruitt, for 6 years, and I've pretty much been unaware of your facility. I appreciate your video today. What I'd like to do sometime, whenever we do have time, if it's okay with you, is maybe take some time out to visit your facility, the entire committee. But we could talk about that after the session, possibly. We've been pretty tied up right now. Do we have any? And also, the commissioner mentioned that he had helped build that facility. I wasn't aware of that, Mr. Pruitt. But do we have any questions from the committee itself here?
Know that there is a standing invitation. We'd certainly welcome having the committee come to our community. I appreciate the time. I know that you guys have had a hectic schedule up there. Good luck. Carry on. Godspeed. And hope to see you soon.
I've got our former Coast Guard commander here, Representative Bill Hudson, wants to ask something.
All right. How you doing?
Fine. Thank you. Very good presentation, and I haven't been up there either for, I guess, since you first started it, so it's really pretty impressive for me to see actual ships on the way up there. That's good. Do we have a proposal? Are you looking for money? You know, what are you looking for?
Well, I just had felt that we probably was the best kept secret. I thought the Transportation Committee and our lawmakers in Juneau in general should be aware of the facility that was built with state money. We're doing this on, we put over $2 million, sewer ships, dry docks, put over $2 million of private money in it. We're getting ready to build a $2.2 million building, which KeyBank is our financing partners in that, and they have approved our loan, and it goes to ADA is the long-term support in that. And I just heard today that I guess they've got a postponement in their meeting from the 22nd to the 13th of next month, which kind of delays our plans, but. We're anxious to get in the ground. The building has been ordered. It's coming from Turlock, California. The erector has been hired, and we're here at the gate and ready to get started. So,
good.
Construction, hopefully, well, the civil work will go into the ground. It's like I said, as soon as the frost is out, we'll start first delivery on the building. The first components will be leaving Turlock on the 17th of June. Hope to catch that June 22nd sailing out of Seattle and be in here approximately 10 days later. We'll start the erection of the building. But we're plowing along on our own money. We were concerned that there might be a policy of state vessels going to the state facility, but I've met with the different departments and have been told that the Bartlett and the Tustamina would certainly, we would certainly be considered to dry dock those and haul those. We're just wanting to to be treated equally and have an opportunity to haul and repair the state-owned vessel.
Thank you.
Okay, I just asked Ray for a picture of your facility. I told him I'd get the frame. I wanted to fill up this room with transportation stuff before the chairman of Labor and Commerce objected. Bill and I share this room in different committees.
Actually, I think what you're doing and what we want to do is one and the same.
Okay. Well, Mr. Pruitt, I appreciate your time, and we'll stay in touch with you. And unless there's any other comments from this committee, we'll move on to Whittier.
Thank you for the time.
Yes, sir. Whittier.
Thank you very much for allowing us to present a briefing, and that's what this is, on issues relative to the Whittier Access Project. I hope the commissioner will forgive me because he's stepped out. He's already seen this presentation, but let me begin by thanking the legislators for the wisdom of your decision in the last session to appropriate money sufficient to meet the state's match for federal ICE-T money for the construction of an access and improved access to the city of Whittier. We are, of course, hopeful that that access will be a road. And the environmental impact statement is out in draft form at this point. The agencies that have a NEPA requirement, that is, they have to comment relative to the National Environmental Protection Act, are reviewing the document and in the process of finishing their comments. The city of Whittier, as a courtesy, received a copy of that. And we have used that document extensively as a means of responding to what the EIS says is a considerable impact, a considerable opportunity for the city of Whittier and Western Prince William Sound to create a marvelous market economy out of the recreation and tourism that will be coming to our part of the country. So those words are, and thank you very much for providing that initial seed money. Of course, that needs to be protected until we actually have the ICE-T money, and that will be coming in fiscal year 1996. The briefing today is to give you an idea of how we intend to respond to what the environmental impact statement says will be an additional 800, not an additional, but a total of 900,000 visitors to this nexus of Western Prince William Sound if there is road access. Currently, we have about 200,000 visitors per year. This is existing Whittier, as you see it today in this rendering. This is what handles the 200,000 visitors that we have today. A few landmarks for those of you who aren't familiar with Whittier and for those of you who haven't been there for a while. This is the large 200-unit Begich Towers, formerly the Hodge Building, now a condominium association, and provides the bulk of the area where Whittier residents live. The other residential area is the Whittier Manor over here, about 80 units. The railroad dock, the 1,000-foot-long railroad dock and the 800-foot-long dock building located here, the ferry terminal here, 232 boats in this harbor. And as you can see, the railroad yards take up the bulk of the valuable open space in the Whittier area. Also obvious is that the town of Whittier is cut off from the waterfront that is its economic lifeline. As a response to the obvious impacts that will accrue to Whittier, the Alaska Railroad, the City of Whittier, Department of Commerce, Alaska Department of Transportation, and Community and Regional Affairs got together to hire a company called International Resort Advisors, who has created resorts all over the world, and asked them to answer two questions for us. Number one, how do we respond to the level of impact that is suggested by the environmental impact statement in its low-case scenario? And the second question is, who benefits from this? Who in the state of Alaska benefits? How does Whittier benefit, and by how much? That is the basically the subject of this briefing, because what we will show is that the investment of an initial $15 million by the state of Alaska to see the construction of the road and to attract a far greater amount of money from the Federal Highway Administration in the construction of the road will accrue to the state of Alaska many, many, many times more than that in local economy. The Inter report looks at the 211 acres that are available for development in the core area of Whittier, over half of which is held by the Alaska Railroad, 70% of which is in the waterfront area, and suggests a bilateral strategy by which the Alaska Railroad and the City of Whittier might jointly develop this area for the economic benefit of both the railroad as a private entity and the City of Whittier as a community, which needs an economic life. What we show here is the enlargement of the harbor to an additional 172 slips, the creation of a facility which will facilitate what will become the largest of the economic opportunities in Whittier, which is the day tour boat activity to the glaciers in the College Fjord area, as well as all of the marvelous places to visit and look at in western Prince William Sound. Today we have 5 tour boat operators operating vessels in excess of 100 feet with a visitation of 200,000 people per year. Well, magnify that by several times to 900,000 and to the projected 1.5 million visitors in 20 years. And you can see that this becomes a very big economy. What you also see here is our recognition of the fact that to deal with that many people, you have to have parking spaces. We provided for ample parking in this limited amount of area by moving the rail yards out of the center of the town and moving them over here to the edge. The Alaska Railroad, in participating in this, suggested that this would be a logical alternative for a siding capable of a build-out of 300 cars, which is what they need. There would then be 2 tracks that lead out of town, one which could bring empty rail cars in, another taking full rail cars out. The transportation pattern that you see here provides for the first time Whittier as a community with access to its economic lifeblood, both with 3 vehicular access points and pedestrian access points. In addition, it provides for a road from the end of the environmental impact statement study from here to an intermodal form of transportation, which is the Alaska Marine Highway System. Currently, the Marine Highway System's terminal is located right here. It's fundamental that we are able to move this ferry boat out of the core area to allow this development to occur. Moving it over here means that we will be able to provide double the staging area and the ability to, as you will see in a moment, to provide additional ferry terminal or waiting space for those queuing up. There are a number of service roads and transportation patterns that logically allow people to move in large numbers in a small area without undue conflict. And that was the challenge that the transportation part of this interdisciplinary team had to meet, and does so very well. The City of Whittier Planning Commission and the City Council are in the process of reworking their comprehensive plan to adopt the INTRA study and its land use plan as a part of its guiding light. It is ongoing now and will be adopted by mid-June. What this portends is living space for up to 1,500 souls, projected for 20 years in the future, ample commercial development space for activities in support of the economy that road access will permit, as well as the development for the first time in Whittier of a town core area. And we'll get another look at that in a moment. One of the most fundamental developments that that the increased access portends is one that we're very excited about, and one that's going to provide us, I think, with one of the larger economies in Whittier, and that is the build-out of the railroad dock and what is called the marginal wharf, not because it's marginal, but because it's built on a margin of land, and it's a nautical term, apparently. This building now, if you were to go into Whittier, you would see it as a 20-foot-high, mustard-colored building that's quite unattractive. And so while this is attractive, it's also very functional, in as much as it helps to reduce snow load on the top of the building. It wasn't built to the standards that it should have been built to because at the time it was created, the military, of course, had lots of soldiers that they could send up on the roof with shovels and take care of snow. So this is functional as well as visual.
I just want to make a note there, Mr. Chairman. I had a friend land an airplane down there.
Yeah.
But there wasn't much left of the airplane when he got done.
Only had one wing.
It wasn't you.
No, no, it's about an 800-foot runway.
Yeah, right.
You gotta be kidding.
No,
everybody has a wing story. Yeah. That's classic. But,
and the airplane, the wing caught and spun out over the dock, and the front end of the engine and everything dropped off, and the windows up. He unbuckled himself and stepped up on the dock.
Is that called any port in a storm?
Yeah, that was a. Quite a landing.
Well, what can this building become? We think that this is a premier multimodal transportation center. And what do we mean by that? The end of the multimodal transportation center is proximate to the large tour boat operation adjacent to it in the boat harbor. This is thought to be the excellent location for those booking in to take the tour boats, waiting rooms, and retail facilities. Down here, retail facilities. By the way, this is about 800 feet long, 60 feet wide, and about 20 feet high. Retail facilities all along in the bottom area. The top area on both sides, hotel rooms, with probably as many as 40 rooms. The center area has been dubbed the Great Hall. It's designed to transport cruise ship passengers from their buses from this side to the other side, passing through interpretive centers that would be provided by the U.S. Forest Service and the Park Service, a way for people to learn about Prince William Sound and Alaska on the way through. Also, retail establishments, the objective being to hold people on the ground as long as possible and allow them to spend money and create economy. As you know, the cruise ship industry moves people in and through its ports in Alaska quite quickly. We need to find strategies to hold them a bit longer and create economy out of that. This end of the building, in as much as the ferry would be relocated to this end, becomes all or in part the possible ferry waiting facility, the waiting room, the terminal, as well as additional retail or professional space. The build-out cost on this is about $1.2 million based upon marine engineering study to rehabilitate the dock area to make it suitable for the cruise ship industry. And by the way, I might add, the cruise ship industry has said when there is a road to Whittier, not if, when there is a road to Whittier, and when you make this dock serviceable, we will be back. As you probably know, Princess Tours is preparing two world-class size cruise ships for Whittier. They believe it is going to happen. We believe that this project can be built out by one or a multiple number of financing schemes. It could be that, dare I say, Princess Cruises may wish to build out the whole facility and rent out, lease out these facilities and make it all pencil out. We've also seen a penciling out if ADA were to be a lead agency with the city, the railroad, and entities working in the financing scheme. So we see this as really a fundamental and key development in Whittier. It's an amenity in as much as it's undercover. It provides an opportunity for the community itself to recreate and shop there as well. Every vision, and this is a vision, it's a vision I think based upon very valid factors, those valid factors being market, visitation, use those words in the same context. When we look at the possibility of a million visitors coming into Whittier, we're looking at a very large market. But as any businessman knows, if you have a market, you have to provide for the market. You're going to have to keep that market. If amenities aren't here for the market goes away. The issue is, we want to protect the investment that the state and the federal government will make in Whittier. We want to protect the investment that private investors would want to make here. This plan illustrates that with a fundamental investment in initial infrastructure by public and private means, it attracts, in the end, at build-out, $80 million in private investment, much along the lines, as I hope Mr. Barnett will point out shortly, that was done in Girdwood, 12 miles away from Whittier. As I say, every vision requires a dream, and the vision that we have for Whittier, based upon the intra plan, and based upon our the build-out construct that we have, is this. Now, this is a long lens. It looks out 20 years. But it's doable within the 211 acres here with the cooperation of the Alaska Railroad and the city of Whittier. We are very near, I believe, to an agreement with the Alaska Railroad for the commitment of this land to this plan. There are very many permutations in terms of bringing this about. The railroad realizes that it is in their economic best interest for the build-out of Whittier, and we too realize that it is in our economic best interest. So what happens here? Well, as we've discussed, we enlarge the harbor. We add 172 additional spaces here, this largely for the seine fleet and the drift fleet, which now must sit on the pick out here because those boats are either too large or too many for our harbor. Our harbor has a waiting list of over 200 in a 332 slip harbor. There are many boats who use Western Prince William Sound as a fishing port because most of the fish are caught in Western Prince William Sound. And unfortunately, some of those boats are too large to use the harbor. If they're over 65 feet, they have to sit on the pick outside. That's unsafe, and it's undue wear and tear on those craft. This provides the opportunity for boats that are larger than 65 feet, be they landing craft or seine boats, to moor in here. It also provides the opportunity for the large 100-foot and in excess of 100-foot tour boats to come in here and load their passengers for the scenic trip to Western Prince William Sound. As you can see, we see the marginal wharf and that build out in perspective. And we see for the first time a community port, that is a community with a center. As it is now, Whittier is divided, as you've seen earlier, with tracks down the middle into the community here, and in a sense, the railroad here. And so you have a split town, one without a sociological center and no economic base. And there is a reality that's creatable here with the road. And that's the key element. As you can see, there's a lot of parking provided for here, an RV park and camping facilities. Not so visible here are the green belts and walking trails linking what will be in the future a great many trails provided by the Forest Service in the mountains above. Our vision also includes a thought that someday the Buckner Building will become something. And we're hopeful that the market will come to bear here. In the end,
about a boat anchor.
We're open to any suggestions.
It used to house a pretty good little bar when I used to sail in there.
Yeah. I suppose there have been a lot of things that have gone on in there in the end over the years. This provides living space for up to 1,500 souls. I thought that by the year 2015 there could be that many people living here. Whittier could logically be a bedroom community for Anchorage and Girdwood. Certainly Girdwood can use the services of those who may want to live in Whittier because it's perhaps less expensive. There is a synergy between that part of Turning an Arm and Passage Canal. In the end, we create a $30 million annual economy based upon the interim report, and it's an economy that doesn't look like it's going to go away. The cruise ship industry is extremely interested in Whittier, and we know that South Central Alaskans are interested in access to Western Prince William Sound as a relief valve from the pressures that are very extreme in the Susitna and Kenai Peninsula areas. There's great fishing in Western Prince William Sound. Not that we expect all the visitors that are going to the Kenai Peninsula or the Susitna area to come to Whittier, not at all. There are a great many more people who would recreate if there was an area to go to that wasn't under such heavy pressure. In the end, I guess what we say is that we think that the road access project that you have provided for is a positive economic development for the state of Alaska, and that this road is not Whittier's road, but it's Alaska's road. And it's a way of diversifying an economy in Alaska that is desperately in need of being diversified. And if we can do this in other places in Alaska, we should commit ourselves to doing that. We thank you very much for your commitment to the Whittier Road Project.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir, Representative Menard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Is the railroad and road traffic at the same level in that design? Is one of them elevated?
Oh, no, they're all a joint-use tunnel. Rail would go down the middle, and then the vehicles, one tire would be in the middle of the rail track.
Okay, no, but I was talking in the city.
Oh, in the city. No, they would be on the same level.
They're on the same level. Yeah. So you're going to have the railroad
crossings.
Crossings.
Yeah, we'll have crossings.
Okay. And has there been
thoughts of making one or the other elevated? Just the cost? Is it just the difference in cost?
No one has entertained that idea yet.
Because it just looks like, you know, in a small town like that, if you got three railroad deals back and forth.
$2 million each.
Yeah. Well,
if you're doing $80 million, you know.
There's a lot to be worked out in that regard, but it's possible that the railroad activities can occur in the after hours. They can build their trains hopefully in the evening. We suspect that there will be, you know, crossings. I mean, it happens elsewhere in America. It may not be convenient, but until we can afford to move the rail operation from here to the head of the bay, where it logically belongs, I think that we'll have to live with this. Logically, it should go out of the core center of the area. I think the railroad would like that, but it's a $4.5 million move. And because this is all market-based, and that is, we are trying to leverage money, we can't figure out how to leverage that amount of money out of this development and get the railroad to the head of the bay.
Menard and Hudson.
What is the population of Whittier now?
280.
280. Thank you.
That's about $1 million per acre.
But Richard, I own 20 acres, so I can like
Oh, okay. Is that your runway in the dock?
Yeah. Line it off, you know, it's the other half, right?
Self-enlightened
density. I think that obviously the big key to this whole thing is whether or not we can build a road into there. And second of all, what it's going to cost, because even though it may only require $15 million of state monies, it's obviously going to take federal highway monies that would be in demand in other parts of the city. So I don't know if we have anything like that. The initial reports that I received was that it's not too positive, that finding vehicular traffic through the long tunnels was going to be an extremely difficult thing. I've talked to some folks in the railroad as well as some safety engineers who claim that you would have to literally have it designed so as a car could break down in the very middle and anybody on either side of it, you know, and turn on fire or something of this nature there, explode or something of this nature there, and they'd still be able to safely get everybody else out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, without, I hate to throw a whole lot of water on and I know this beautiful area myself, but I think we definitely have to get those figures and the practicality of that concept before we, you know, get too far down the pike.
Representative Hudson, with Mr. Foster's permission, the environmental impact statement and the related documents go into great detail about how the tunnel build-out would occur, meeting Federal Highway Administration standards, which are very stringent on that very sort of thing. Build-outs include fire-safe areas for escape, pull-outs for vehicles to be pulled out of the way if there should be problems, fire retardant materials, and fire safety facilities on both ends of the tunnel. It's a big concern, certainly.
And we got any idea what that cost might be?
Well, the entire cost, I don't have the breakdown, although it exists, but the entire cost for the project, based on AODT numbers at this point, for the road option number 3, which is the simplest of the road options, is $49 million. $38 million in ICE-T money.
There it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all those stringent requirements, I'm not surprised in about 5 years they'll probably have to have somebody out there do a complete maintenance check on your car before they let you enter the tunnel.
Well, I'm sure it'll be similar to what they do on the ships.
Well, watch for that trip.
I've got 3 minutes to get this bill out. I'm going to move on here. I appreciate you coming here.
My pleasure.